Blue water reflects white fluffy clouds and a crescent moon. A fishing line plops into the water and a cork sends ripples outward. High overhead, a little boy is fishing from the moon. The moon changes into the letter D and the word DreamWorks floats among the clouds. Against a starry sky, the screen reads DreamWorks SKG. Icons adorn the walls of an ornate church, and chandeliers send soft rays of light throughout the sanctuary. As a priest circles an altar carrying a censer, smoke filters from the small vessel of burning incense. Following behind him, a man is carrying two long candles with blue ribbons, and a naked baby rests in a cloth draped across his forearms. He and the priest bow toward the altar as they circle. A boys' choir edges the area, and a group of people is standing a short distance from the altar watching the ceremony. A young woman is at the front of the group between a young man and a white-haired man with a neatly shaped beard. The white-haired man reaches into his pocket and looks at a pager. He whispers into the young woman's ear, and she nods as he steps away. Outside, he dials a cell phone. He puts it to his ear as a man strides from the evening shadows. As the white-haired man speaks into the phone, a translation reads, Mr. Minister, someone paged me, but no one's there. The other man watches a little girl cross the hallway, yes, then speaks, I paged you. The white-haired man faces him, saying, yes. The little girl places dried flowers on a small kiosk as the white-haired man asks, it couldn't wait until tomorrow at Parliament? The little girl goes into a room, and the other man paces forward, saying, no. He pulls a gun and shoots the white-haired man. The killer puts the gun away, stares down coldly at the white-haired man, and walks away. Elsewhere, a military vehicle moves through an open iron gate, and several uniformed soldiers march behind it in formation. A car approaches from the opposite direction and stops at a manned barricade. A soldier looks at the car's plates, then walks away. An officer inside the car kisses the woman driving and gets out of the car. He and the woman wave at each other, and the car backs away. The officer steps forward, and a soldier lifts the red and gray barricade for him to pass. The young officer looks back and swallows hard. Nearby, military personnel watch as a missile is being lifted from an underground silo.
There we go.
The screen reads, Missile Base, Chelyabinsk, Russia. A jeep drives through the military compound and stops near a train. The young officer gets out, looks around at the soldiers and military equipment, then walks along the landing. Groups of men are working near a missile that is hanging horizontally several feet off the ground. Four soldiers carry a long, heavy metal container from the site. The young officer walks through the steam near the train. A soldier gives commands to the four soldiers with the container, and they place it in a boxcar with several other containers and chain it down securely. As the young officer speaks to the soldier, the translation reads, Have our SDART friends given us permission to do our jobs yet? The soldier replies, Yes, sir, and we didn't even have to ask. The officer asks, Something wrong, Sergeant? The sergeant looks up, stating, I didn't join the Russian army to dismantle it for the Americans, sir. And the officer replies, None of us did. The world changes. We must change with it. The young officer walks away from the sergeant and, pulling the key from his pocket, opens a small hatch on the back of a train car. He presses a lighted keypad, and a row of lights turns red. The boxcar door slides shut on the long metal containers. A car moves toward the train, its headlights shining along the steamy landing. The sergeant salutes, and the soldiers in camouflage uniforms snap to attention in a single row. The car stops, and a man gets out, his dark boots shining as he steps onto the pavement. The young officer gives a sharp salute and turns toward the car. An officer in knee boots and a long coat draped across his broad shoulders moves solemnly along the row of men. They watch him as he passes. He stops in front of the young officer and speaks to him.
Вольно. Обеспечено.
Everything is ready?
Так точно,
the young officer looks directly at the general and states, everything is ready, General.
Желаю удачи.
Good luck.
Спасибо, товарищ.
Thank you, sir.
Вольно.
The general leaves.
Командуя управление.
And the young officer steps onto the train. He walks down the corridor of a passenger car where young soldiers are sitting in groups of wooden seats that face each other. Walking to the far end of the passenger car, he steps out onto a platform and leans forward to look toward the front of the train. Its headlights shining, steam begins pouring from the engine, and its mighty wheels begin to turn. Breathing from his mouth, the wide-eyed young officer looks around, then swallows hard as the train pulls out of the station and into the dark night. Later, the train is moving down a long track through the countryside. Steam pours from the smokestack, leaving a long white trail along its back. The train moves across a long bridge, over a road far below, and continues through the night, yellow lights shining from the passenger car windows. A heavy mist drifts through the dense trees lining the train's path. Inside, soldiers are sleeping, sprawled across the seats with their heads leaning against the side of the train. The young officer is sitting awake in one of the wooden seats beside the sleeping sergeant. The officer looks at his watch and fidgets with his tie. Meanwhile, a peasant man is carrying a lantern along a path, walking to a small stone building and going inside as the train passes. Inside the stone outhouse, the peasant man is seated, reading a newspaper. The outhouse begins to shake, and the man looks up with a surprised expression as a second train passes. Red lights glow from the inside of the engine as it moves down the track, closely behind the first train. The peasant man steps outside and watches as the second train passes. Inside the second train, armed men in dark clothing, helmets, and masks are sitting somberly. Red lights flash and they turn on night vision sights that glow like sinister red eyes in the dark train car. A man climbs a ladder and opens a hatch in the roof of the dark car. He steps onto the roof and looks ahead at the first train as they move closer to it. He motions for the other men in masks to join him. One by one, they climb onto the roof as the second train pulls alongside the first. Crouching on the roof of the second train, their sinister red eyes peer through the windows at the sleeping soldiers in the lighted car of the first train. The young officer looks out the window as the men in dark clothes begin to leap onto the top of the train he's riding on. The young officer looks up as the men move across the top of the train toward a guard on the back platform. One of the men in a mask opens an electrical box, cuts a wire, and the lights go out inside the first train. The young officer stands, walks to the back of the train car, and goes outside onto the landing. Leaning out, he watches as the men continue to leap onto the roof of the first train. The armed men in masks go into the train car and take positions near the sleeping soldiers. Red laser beam sights stream from their guns as they shoot the sleeping soldiers. The bullets silently pierce the walls, and the laser sights shine through bullet holes appearing near the young officer taking cover on the rear platform. The general drops from the roof onto the platform next to the young officer, who has a painful expression on his face. The general grabs the young officer by the lapels, pulls him to his feet, pats him on the back, and pushes him into the car. Inside, soldiers are dead in the seats and on the floor. The young officer walks down the aisle, his hand at his throat. He stops and looks down at the sergeant as the general urges him forward. As he steps onto the platform of the car ahead of him, the young officer gets a key from his pocket, opens a panel on the car, and presses a keypad. The red lights on the panel go out, green lights turn on, and the side door of the boxcar slides open. Several of the men in masks swing from the roof into the boxcar and move to the long containers. The general follows the young officer up a ladder onto the top of the first train. They turn toward the second train, plant their feet firmly, and leap onto it. Several men push a ramp from the second train across an open space to the first train. They walk across the ramp into the boxcar containing the long containers. One by one, they roll the containers onto the second train. The general looks on with a sneer as the young officer looks at him with a frown. A masked man takes a control panel from a protective case and connects it to a device inside one of the long containers. The young officer asks, "What are they doing?" The general looks at a stopwatch that shows 10 minutes. A man in a mask presses controls on the panel, setting its timer for 10 minutes. As the general gives a hand signal, the man activates the timer and the readout starts counting backwards from 10 minutes. The general smiles. A man in a mask presses two wires together and the train tracks move, sending the first train veering off to the left as the second train continues moving forward. Top of the second train lie flat as the train enters a tunnel and begins to slow down. As it pulls to a stop, the men on the train turn on more lights, and the general and young officer jump from the roof of one car to the platform car with the stolen containers. The general looks at his stopwatch and states, 8 minutes 40 seconds, no time to relax, boys. The young officer looks behind them and mutters, "Oh my God." As the first train continues its rapid pace along the track, a third train is traveling through the night full of passengers. Inside the crowded train, an old man and woman are holding hands, and a young woman is reading the newspaper. In the engine of the first train, the fire is stoked and burning, but the engineer's dead body is slumped over the controls as it speeds toward a head-on collision with the third train. Inside the third train, people are packed into the seats, and families are gathered together, unaware of the impending crash. In the third train's engine, the engineer leans forward wide-eyed as he sees the first train speeding towards him. He leans out the window, then pulls the brake, and leaps from the engine with another man. Meanwhile, a woman and the peasant man from the outhouse are asleep in bed. They sit up suddenly and see a bright light on the far horizon. In the tunnel with the second train, the young officer faces the wall, repeating, "Oh God, oh my God." The general approaches him and says, "Calm down. We're going to die. We're 15 kilometers away under a mountain. I want my money. Be strong. You're an officer. I'm so afraid." No, it's time to be strong." "I don't think I am." The general lowers his head, saying, "Pity." The young officer's body lurches, his eyes widened in shock. and the general coldly shoves him to the ground. At the crash site, the trains are burning and the cars are littered along the track, some broken and blazing, others turned onto their sides. Some of the passengers are scrambling to get away from the wreckage. Near the back of the train, the only long device left behind by the masked men has fallen out of the train car and is shown lying on the ground with its timer counting down past 30 seconds. Meanwhile, the peasant man and woman are out of bed. They go outside, holding hands, and hurry across their yard looking toward the glowing horizon. As a bright light blossoms from the crash site, the woman drops to the ground, the man leans over her, and a searing wall of wind and flame speeds forward, engulfing. Shown from underwater, bubbles glisten in the swimming pool as a young woman swims laps. Stretching her arms out, she reaches the edge of the pool, surfaces, and looks up to see a shining black shoe of a man in a military uniform. She looks up at him.
What happened?
I don't know, Dr. Kelly. Please come with me, ma'am.
Later, toweling her hair dry, she hurries into a busy room.
I've got estimates on cloud size coming through on line 6.
All right, what do we got? Kimura's got R4 going to sector 98667. It's been localized. 60 degrees longitude, 50 lat.
What about MPIC?
Ground blast 40 minutes ago in the Ural Mountains. Two trains collided. One was carrying warheads for Chubinsk. Nice hair.
Nuclear forces are going from DEFCON 4 to DEFCON 3.
Fairfax is coming in right now.
NMCC is concerned the Russians are going to use this incident to veil troop movements into Chechnya and Georgia.
That's not our problem. Estimates from Livermore?
500 to 700 kilotons.
She stares at a young man in glasses.
Mark Appleton's looking for you. He's upstairs.
All current data on my desk?
Yes.
I'm going to need a minute.
Alan, radiation pattern projections?
Yeah, but those aren't confirmed.
We'll get them confirmed.
Upstairs.
Russia, what a mess. God, I missed the Cold War. Get Essler down here now. I need a translator.
Essler's gone. He quit to run JPL 3 weeks ago.
Right. Who do we appoint?
My memo's sitting on your desk.
He's who the hell's in charge down there.
Mark.
Kelly joins them.
Excuse me. Sorry. Forget Chernobyl. This is huge.
Dr. Julia Kelly, acting chair of Nuclear Smuggling Group. Of course, you know Terry Hamilton, National Security Advisor.
Yes, sir. We met at last year's Christmas party.
I'm briefing the president in 35 minutes. I need to explain to him how, with our own start team, there an awful accident like this could happen.
It wasn't an accident, sir.
They stop abruptly in a hallway.
I'm sorry?
We believe that train was carrying SS-18s. SS-18s penciled out at one point safe.
What's she saying?
Sir, it means if you fire a bullet directly into the warhead, there's less than a 1 in a million chance of the bomb going off.
The warhead has to be ignited by its own nuclear trigger. Would you hold this, please? Here we have a satellite image. This is the two trains approaching, and here's the collision itself. Now check out the field of regard.
She holds up pictures.
These two shots are at the same height because they occurred at the same time. Look at the blast. It's 2 degrees higher. After the satellites passed over.
Elapsed time between shots?
Between the train wreck and the detonation, 4.5 minutes. Somebody set that nuclear weapon off. This was a terrorist act.
Hamilton stares down at her.
Full NSC briefing at 9 a.m. The Russians' accident story will stand for now. No background leaks to the press. Nobody shows up on Nightline. Dr.
Kelly.
Dr. Kelly, I'm putting your group on point until I find a replacement.
Yes, sir.
He steps away.
Give me the latest satellite overview. And keep the updates coming.
She turns and faces four men who are staring at her.
Okay, State, we're going to need talking points for the president. We're also going to need to know anybody that might want to detonate a nuke on Russian soil. General, I'm going to need a military liaison with intel background and Russian contacts.
You got it.
Oh, and General, make sure he's willing to take orders from a woman.
In a military courtroom.
Now, Colonel DeVoe, let's deal with the events of May 18th. You were arrested in a bar brawl in a Moscow disco called Nightcrawler?
Yes, ma'am. That's correct.
And you were in the company of a prostitute and a Russian army colonel named Dmitry Vertikov?
Yes, ma'am. That is also correct. Dmitry and I went into this bar to try and buy some nerve gas off this ex-KGB guy that we had heard was selling black market surplus munitions to Iraq. The fight started because, well, we'd run up a bit of a bar tab, and we were...
I believe the exact amount was $5,200.
Mm-hmm. Well, we had dinner, and I bought a couple of rounds. Colonel Verdikoff identified the KGB guy, and we were able to stop the nerve gas from getting to Iraq. So how do you repay a man like that?
Sports utility vehicle?
That's exactly right. Dimitri has a teenage daughter. She likes to go four-wheeling. I know this guy in Maryland who cut me a great deal on these Explorers. I like the Bronco a little bit better myself.
Colonel, let me get this straight. You spent taxpayers' money to buy and ship an Explorer 8,000 miles to the teenage daughter of a Russian colonel.
Yes, ma'am.
The general from the State Department is watching.
Think of it as exporting goodwill.
DeVoe smiles. Elsewhere, a truck pulls along the road as the second train leaves the tunnel. Several armed men are sitting on top of the train, and others are on a flatbed car with long containers. The screen reads, Ural Mountains, Central Russia. The train pulls to a stop as the truck backs up to the flatbed. The general is standing with the containers as a stern-faced young man with thick, dark hair gets out of the truck and walks toward him. Men from the train start loading the containers into the back of the truck, and the general jumps down from the train. The stern-faced young man faces him and states, "We never discussed detonating a bomb." The general responds, "If they discovered missing warheads, they would have found us in hours. Now it'll be days before they even reach the crash site." The stern-faced man opens a bag. The general looks in, pulls out money, and says, "I hate these new ones. They don't seem real. He looks bug-eyed, deformed." The general takes the bag, and the stern-faced man says, "They'll have the roads blocked.
Your Russian is awful. Speak English. Hey, be ready, ребята.
It was stupid. Understand?
Your friends made this deal, but this is my operation. Don't make me start thinking, oh, why I don't need you.
They will never let us through. Of course they will. Section 21A.
Nuclear disaster protocol. One, secure area. Two, control debris, free, evacuate casualties."
He hits the truck. A tarp lowers on the back of the truck bearing a Red Cross insignia. The stern-faced man walks away stating, "It was stupid." Elsewhere, DeVoe enters a meeting room.
"We have the technical know-how and should not be ruled out. And moving on, we come to Shamil Basayev, a scientist. He claims responsibility for having placed a canister of radioactive cesium in a park in Moscow last June. But his underworld ties suggest he could be part of a much bigger operation."
Dr. Kelly is at a podium.
"Zelmkan Yandarbiev, Chechen leader since the Russians assassinated Dudayev. He has threatened to attack Federation nuclear power plants. There are other possibles on our terrorist list as outlined in Section 4 of your packet. Our reaction to the crisis is as follows. We have initiated an intelligence directive with the nuclear smuggling group acting as hub. DIA and NRO heads up. You'll continue responsibility for primary set imagery."
"Excuse me, ma'am. I'm sorry, I don't mean to interrupt. Yes. These terrorists, have they asked for anything yet? Listed demands? Russians out of a Chechnya, that sort of thing?"
"No, but it's not unusual for days, even weeks, to go by before a claim of responsibility is made."
"Yeah.
Air Mode Command is standing by for
contingency
operations."
"Excuse me again, ma'am. I'm sorry. That's a satellite shot of the two trains just before they collided. Now,
Dr. Kelly, perhaps you should discuss special op possibilities."
"Right. General Garnett has Special Operations Command at full alert. Excuse me."
"Excuse me. I'm sorry to keep interrupting."
DeVoe steps forward.
"You see these blobs right here at 1 meter resolution here and here? Those are people jumping off the passenger train before it crashes. Now take a look at that train. That's the one with the nuke. Nobody's jumping off that. Why not?"
He faces her, and she looks from an image on the wall to a photograph.
"They were already dead."
"How many warheads were on that train?"
"The Russians haven't confirmed yet."
"So we have no idea of potential yield."
She faces DeVoe with an inquisitive frown.
"Are you suggesting this was a robbery?"
"I'm suggesting that whoever did this had access to Russian satellite positioning intel."
"That leaves out your Chechen rebels."
"I would like to point out that 1,500 people were killed last night. You don't do that unless you're trying to make a very profound statement."
"Do you know how much a functioning nuke is worth on the open market?"
"Minimum $200 million.
$200 million makes for a very profound statement. Now, I'm sorry, ma'am, the detonation was a smokescreen. This was a hijacking, and whoever stole these things
Got off the bus a long way back.
Well, we will certainly be considering your theory. Thank you. Thank you very much.
That's just a pity.
She nods with a half-hearted smile.
Away.
In the Ural Mountains, the truck with the Red Cross insignia is driving along a country road. It stops when it reaches an intersection with another dirt road lined with traffic. A vehicle's engine is smoking in the intersection, blocking the Red Cross truck, and none of the traffic ahead of it or behind it is moving. Soldiers are standing alongside the roadway as four men from the Red Cross truck walk toward them in protective suits and gas masks, waving their arms and motioning them to leave. The soldiers push the stalled vehicle off the road and motion the Red Cross truck through the stalled traffic so it can proceed. Meanwhile, Kelly is in the busy room.
All right, anything on DIA? Anything yet?
I'll call. We should have Russian intel within the half hour.
Great. Sue, I need the start observer's report. Not just the summaries, not just the abstracts, the whole thing.
I'm all over.
And where the hell is my military liaison? Is
right
anybody
here.
See it?
She turns to face DeVoe.
Lieutenant Colonel Tom DeVoe reporting as ordered, ma'am.
She puts her hand on her hip and stares at him.
My enthusiasm sometimes gets the best of me. I hope that I didn't offend you in there.
No, of course not. Coffee?
Sure, I'd love some.
It's over there.
She walks away.
Russian Missile Command's holding on line 6.
And I would like to reiterate our commitment to helping you come up with some answers.
She's on the phone.
Yes.
DeVoe enters.
I understand, General.
Get you some coffee.
He puts a cup of coffee on her desk.
That's right. Well, we need to know exactly who was on that train. I am the man in charge. I report directly to the president.
He reads a card from a bouquet.
What do you want me to say?
She turns and sees him reading it.
I don't see what that has to do with anything.
She grabs the card from DeVoe.
Yes, well, I see. No, I understand. I know I have something.
DeVoe knocks over a pencil holder.
All right, well, if you would be able to get back to me with the names of the men who were on the train and the number of warheads, that would be wonderful.
She motions him away.
And how long do you think that will take? Well,
She frowns toward DeVoe.
I'll be expecting your call. Thank you.
The general, the dark-haired man, and a driver are in the cab of the Red Cross truck as it speeds down a country road. Meanwhile, people are working in the busy office.
Colonel, we got the confirmation. There were 10 warheads on that train.
Departure orders. 40 men on board.
This is meaningless.
It's in Russian.
Kelly looks at DeVoe and in Russian says it's meaningless because they haven't listed anybody's rank. DeVoe asks, where'd you learn to speak Russian?
Princeton.
The blue-blooded backbone of our country.
My father's a mailman.
You'd never know.
Ilin, Kotarov, Kulik, Lewandowski.
Alexander Kotarov.
Yeah, Kotarov, you know him?
Yeah, I know him.
DeVoe steps away and she follows.
All right, I don't know about the rest of these guys, but General Alexander Kotarov doesn't ride around on a nuclear transport train. Give me NMCC intel, please. It's like a bonnet Trump on a subway.
In the Pentagon's National Military Control Center.
I'd have that enhanced off the Ural.
Yes, sir.
Sergeant?
Sir.
Kelly and DeVoe enter.
We're light on human. We know Kotarov's under investigation for corruption, probably going to be indicted. He gave a speech 9 days ago in St. Petersburg, mostly nationalistic bluster, bemoaning the loss of empire and necessary unity of the Slavic peoples. Family history, phone records, bank statements. Your analysis from a Moscow traffic stop last month, 0.367.
Oh, amazing if you could turn the key.
Yeah, that's definitely a few cocktails. So I was a dentist on Tuesday, had dinner with some very attractive people on Friday. We haven't been able to ID them yet.
Sergeant Costello, you're slipping.
Oh, I'm getting old, sir.
You're not old. General Garnett's old.
If you don't mind me asking, sir, is Kotarov involved?
We don't know. He was on the train.
You see, that's funny.
Why's that?
Because the general's got this Finnish mistress, right? She lives in Helsinki.
Lena.
Right. Guy calls her every day like clockwork and never misses. Mm-hmm.
So?
Well, the thing is, if this Kotarov guy was on that train and he's so dead, who's bouncing calls to Lena in Helsinki off some satellite over southern Russia?
The young man with the glasses is with them.
That's a secure phone. I need it.
Sir, I gotta
Excuse me, General.
As DeVoe hurries to the phone, Kelly steps to a general at a large conference table.
Sir, if a top-ranking Russian general is involved, any intel we get from Moscow is either compromised. Polkovnik Verdikov, Josta, or a flat-out lie.
You're right.
Dmitri, Tom DeVoe.
What do you want?
What's the matter? Are you busy?
I'm with two women. Call me back some other time.
How are you guys holding up?
I think the only virtuous people are forgetting Chechnya.
Yeah. Listen, D, I've got the troop manifest from that train. Alek Kodorov got vaporized out there, did he?
Yeah. What a shame.
Yeah. So how is it he's calling Lena from a bird over southern Russia? How's he doing that, D?
Dmitri, in military uniform, glances around a room filled with computers and personnel.
You must be wrong about that, Tom. Our figures indicate the fallout should have dissipated by then. Let me fax you what we've got, your number.
Hold on. Fax number. Fax. Hang on, I'll give you the number. All right, 001703-51168.
I'm going to hang up now. Bye.
DeVoe looks at the phone in his hand, then hangs up.
That scared him.
The sergeant follows him around the table.
Is this the fax?
Yes, sir.
DeVoe steps to a large window facing a lower room. Kelly joins him, and they look at a wall of huge TV screens.
Information on the nuclear weapon incident in Russia's Ural Mountains is still sketchy at this hour, but we do have a few new facts about the magnitude of the disaster. Seismographs around the world detected the blast. And we have reports that the explosion was seen as far away as Lithuania on the Baltic Sea. Initial projections indicate the nuclear fallout will affect all of Russia and northern Europe. Still no word on casualties. Now there's word that President Clinton will issue a...
They hurry to the facts.
Vienna, 2 p.m. Barclays.
Why Vienna?
Kordek.
Maybe. Kordek is a front for the Russian mafia in Vienna.
And it's a trucking company.
As a jet airplane takes off, Kelly is inside it, looking at diagrams, working on a laptop, and speaking to the young man with glasses.
I need NORAD Sector 9877 intel from the Urals, updated fallout patterns, and troop movements from NATO.
DeVoe offers her peanuts.
They roasted. Figure by mind if I stole a couple of bags? My old man will get a kick out of the executive seal.
Go ahead, knock yourself out. And would you call Langley? We're still waiting on a psych profile on Kodorov.
He's an idiot. Save you a trip.
Thanks. I'll set it for the official version.
Okay, officially, he's an idiot. He'll do anything for money, which is the good news because it makes him fairly predictable.
Really? I'd say he's been anything but predictable.
He took an order for an expensive, hard-to-find product, and he intends to make good on delivery. Supply and demand.
Your area of expertise, right, Colonel?
Yeah,
at least that's the word on the hill.
Ooh, you've been checking up on me.
I like to know who I'm working with.
I'd like to know something. You moved from Lawrence Livermore to the White House. So, first you build the bombs to blow up the entire world, and now you want to save it. Make up your mind. Which is it going to be?
Well, I believe this week we're saving it. So it's really that simple?
It is, to me, that simple. And when you've been the boss for more than 2 weeks, you'll know that.
3 weeks. You've done some check-in yourself.
I like to know who I'm working with. Doctor, you can run your charts and your theories all you want. In the field, this is how it works. Good guys, it's us. We chase the bad guys, and they don't wear black hats. They are, however, all alike. They demand power and respect, and they are willing to pay top dollar to get it. And that is our highly motivated buyer.
What about other motivations?
Not important to me.
Whether it's important to you or not, there are people out there who don't care about money and don't give a damn about respect. People who believe the killing of innocent men and women is justified. For them, it is about rage, frustration, hatred. They feel pain and they're determined to share it with the world.
Okay, that does me no good. Now let's deal with the facts at hand. 23 hours ago, General Alexander Kodorov stole 10 nuclear warheads.
He's just a delivery boy. I'm not afraid of the man who wants 10 nuclear weapons, Colonel. I'm terrified of the man who only wants one.
Elsewhere, faded Olympic rings are painted on the side of a dilapidated wall. The yard around deteriorating buildings is littered with rubble and cars. A man is in a wheelchair, and clothes are hanging from homemade clotheslines. The screen reads, Sarajevo, Grbavica, Bosnia. Children are playing among the rubble, and people are talking. A charred car is smoldering as a man passes with a wheelbarrow. The scene travels past a little girl playing on a swing set, and a little boy sitting in a toy car. Passing by a woman hanging clothes on a line in the front yard, the scene moves to a curtained doorway that leads into an apartment. Inside, a young girl is playing a baby grand piano, and a thin man with a gaunt face is leaning against the back of a chair to her left.
No,
listen. She moves to the chair and he sits at the piano. Music should flow like a language, child. He says, listen, and begins to play. Joy.
Tuga.
Sadness. You understand? Changing a single note can turn joy to sorrow. Your turn. He gets up and stands behind her as she sits on the piano bench. Touching the top of her head gently, he steps away, folding his arms in front of him. He goes to a window and looks out solemnly.
Professor?
Professor?
Yeah.
The Red Cross truck is parked on the side of a road with the men outside and the dark-haired man using a cell phone. The piano professor answers his phone. Hello? Dusan?
Yes, Vlado.
Who's this? It's me, Vlado. Is everything okay?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, we're on schedule.
Yes.
Brother, listen to me. I'm scared. Elsewhere, tourists are walking along cobblestone streets. The screen reads Vienna, Austria. Kelly and DeVoe approach Dimitri, who's in civilian clothes and a Bavarian hat.
Hey, look who's the secret agent.
Nice hat. You don't stand out at all.
Dress shoes is khakis.
Look at you.
Leave me.
What are they doing to you? Let me tell you, whatever happens tonight, just tonight.
Okay, I'll try that. Now, these are CDs. They are for Tasha. You will not like them. How is she?
16. And in love is a 20-year-old motocross racer.
Mm-hmm.
I am worried sick. She's here to say hello.
Now send him money.
Is Kotaroff involved with Kordak? Is that why we're meeting in Vienna?
So this is Dr. Julia Kelly. This is Colonel Dmitry Verdikov. Dr. Kelly heads a nuclear smuggling group.
Huh. With the White House.
Dmitry kisses her hand and in Russian says, a beautiful woman with a PhD. You're way out of your league. She says, you have no idea, Colonel.
It's good. I think we can do business, Dr. Kelly. Let's take a walk.
Let's take a walk.
Later, DeVoe is carrying two drinks through a crowded tavern. He takes them to a table, sits with Dmitry and Kelly, and gives Dmitry one of the glasses.
They sit here and drink. Well, we might have joined them.
Might have been monitoring Kordak for years, but it's always been a Mafia ex-KGB operation.
And recently, you have to see that in the context of my country. Alek Kotaroff comes from a generation of officers who grew up in the crumbling system. Those pictures in here about Russia. Bread-lined little apartments, ancient cars. Kotaroff and his friends made sure that it never applied to them. But now, even that system is crumbling. This was Kotaroff's way out, his big score.
So you brought us here because you can't investigate Kordak yourself?
No. I can't investigate without alerting Kotaroff. Half the men used to be in my unit.
He looks down thoughtfully.
Mr. Dietrich Schumacher schedules all Russian shipping for Kordak. You have an appointment at 4.
Good. Let's go see a man about a truck.
Cheers.
DeVoe takes a drink.
That's gasoline.
Later, a man is cooking outdoors on a grill. The Red Cross truck makes its way toward him through the crowded city street. A balding man at a table near the grill takes a long draw on his cigarette, downs a drink, and stands. Picking up a large backpack, he walks to the truck. General Kotaroff and Vlado get out and face him.
Do you have them?
Yes.
and we have to begin immediately.
Blotto and the balding man walk to the back of the truck. Kotarov spits on the street, then gets in the truck. In the back, Blotto and a man move a metal container.
Oh, Bistro, you right?
The balding man opens a silver metal briefcase and removes a tube. In Vienna, Kelly and DeVoe are walking up a red-carpeted stairway in a lavish building.
No, you just have to remember the plan. I'm Anthony Hayden.
I'm Patty Carson. We go in, we get the information, we get out.
Call me Tony. Here we go. Hi.
Hi.
I'm Anthony Hayden. This is my associate, Patty Carson. I think Herr Schumacher is expecting us.
Right. Please follow me.
He looks up at a surveillance camera, and a man at a computer captures the image.
Please make yourselves comfortable.
Thank you.
A computer checks the photo as Kelly and DeVoe enter a room with beautiful paintings.
Trucking business must be pretty good. I wonder what chateau in the lower valley these came from.
Mr. Hayden, welcome.
Thank you very much for seeing us. This is my associate, Ms. Carson.
Shoemaker kisses Kelly's hand.
Nice place you have here.
My personal taste runs to the Italians, but the German, mostly in late Baroque, was heavily influenced by the Italians. Several of our paintings are Italian.
Mm-hmm.
That's a Tiepolo.
Oh, yeah. I'm a big Leroy Neiman fan myself. Are you familiar at all with his work?
No. I'm afraid not. Please, come in.
Sure.
To my office.
Now, this is nice.
Thank you. Have a seat.
Shoemaker closes a massive set of doors as Kelly and DeVoe sit.
How can we help you?
Well, I just wanted some information about trucking in Russia.
I might not be the right man if you need to rent equipment.
You're the head of transportation, right?
The head? No, I just do the scheduling.
Right. You're the guy who gets things done. Smart. Put a German on it.
Kelly looks from Shoemaker to DeVoe wide-eyed.
Yes. Well, as I said, how can I help you?
Well, what we want to know is, if I wanted to rent a vehicle to steal and transport nuclear weapons from somewhere, let's say, inside the Urals, would you be the guy to talk to?
DeVoe grins at Shoemaker, who's holding his hand to his mouth thoughtfully.
Would you be that guy?
DeVoe slides an envelope across a table. Looking from DeVoe to Kelly, Shoemaker picks it up and looks inside. He pulls out a few bills of money, and Kelly smiles nervously. He puts the envelope back on the table and smiles.
No, I'm afraid not. I believe our meeting is over.
Shoemaker stands.
All right, well, thank you for your...
The Explorers?
We have to go, Mr.
Range Rovers, Land Cruisers...
We really have to go.
No, Patty, we really
Mr.
have
Mr. Hayden,
to
may I ask you to leave the...
The boat hits him.
No! Should have taken the money, Hans.
Hey.
Now get up and get behind that desk.
You broke my nose.
Not a word. Get the duct tape out of my briefcase now. I'm not going to shoot you unless I have to, and if I have to, I'm going to feel real bad about it. Now sit down. Give me the duct tape.
Here.
Holding the gun to Shoemaker's chest, DeVoe unrolls the tape with his teeth. Meanwhile, the surveillance camera computer is running through photos trying to identify DeVoe's image. Kelly bends over Shoemaker's computer.
I need the password. What's the password?
Hang on. Hang on. The password.
No.
Hi. Hang on. All right, Hans. We'll do it your way. How's the back end? Password.
DeVoe holds a gun with a silencer against Shoemaker's arm.
Hasselhoff.
Hasselhoff. How do you spell Hasselhoff?
Kelly enters the password.
Way to go, Hans. Very brave.
As the security guard stares at photos on his monitor, Kelly types frantically on Shoemaker's keyboard.
I'm in.
All right. I need... the trucking invoices for the last 7 days.
All right.
Spinning Shoemaker in a desk chair, DeVoe wraps him in duct tape. In the security room, the man moves the computer through more photos. Kelly looks from Shoemaker's computer to DeVoe.
This is your plan?
Yep.
This is your big plan?
This is my plan.
Shoemaker's computer shows the project 33% complete as information prints out. It changes to 66% complete.
Go, hurry up.
In the surveillance room, the computer continues moving through more photos.
Let's go, come on.
Almost. Just logging off.
Stay on. Who cares? Leave it on.
Got it.
Rushing across the room, they gather their briefcases, leaving Shoemaker bound with duct tape in the middle of the room.
All right, hang on. Thank you very much, Herr Schumacher.
DeVoe and Kelly walk slowly from the office. Meanwhile, the surveillance images pass by a photo of DeVoe in uniform. The man backs the images up and finds DeVoe's photo in printed information. He compares it to the surveillance image and reaches for a phone. Kelly and DeVoe walk past his office and leave. Outside, a Mercedes pulls up. DeVoe gets in the passenger seat and Kelly gets into the back as Dimitri is driving.
Come on!
Dimitri drives the car away from the building and down the rain-soaked street.
You get it? Got it. You all right?
No, I'm not all right. Brilliant idea to
that
smash
his face. That is how things get done here. A couple of rides and never happened at all. Jeff. Am I right?
Check the seats. They go all the way back.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
right.
Cool.
An embassy car.
Of course. CD player, bulletproof glass, everything.
A car pulls in front of the Mercedes, forcing it to stop. Three more surround it.
We may have a problem.
This is going to cost us.
What do you have?
Thank you. That's enough.
Huh?
I'll be back.
Dimitri gets out with DeVoe's money.
Hold this.
DeVoe gives Kelly papers. Dimitri talks to a man by the car and taps the hood.
So you think he set us up?
Who?
Your friend.
No.
How can you be so sure?
Because he's my friend.
Dimitri looks at DeVoe and shrugs, then steps toward the Mercedes.
You need more money. Come here.
The man by the car reaches for a gun and points it at Dimitri. DeVoe gets behind the wheel.
Oh my God!
The man shoots Dimitri again, then points the gun at DeVoe. DeVoe rams the car behind them. The man shoots at the front window and DeVoe rams the car ahead of them. He backs up again. As the man ejects the gun clip and grabs another one, DeVoe shoves his gun barrel through a hole in the window and shoots. The man falls. DeVoe drives away, scraping past cars in the street. Three cars of men race after them, leaving Dimitri lying dead in the street. Kelly gets into the passenger seat as the Mercedes speeds down a cobblestone street.
They're behind us.
How many of them?
Two, three.
All right. Reach into that briefcase, pull an extra magazine.
The Mercedes takes a sharp right, and people scatter as it speeds by.
Where is it? In the briefcase, reach in.
Kelly fumbles in the briefcase at her feet as the chase continues. Turns into an arched alleyway as the three cars spin around the corner. Stopped in the shadows, DeVoe and Kelly watch as cars drive slowly down the street behind them. In the light of traffic, the three cars pass them by. One backs up and stops behind them. DeVoe puts the car in reverse, slams into the car behind them, and drives it through a plate glass window on the other side of the street. The other two cars spin into a U-turn in the street as the Mercedes drives away. Meeting an oncoming truck, DeVoe stops the Mercedes and backs up as the two cars drive back down the street toward them. He backs past them, turns the car, and drives away in the opposite direction. DeVoe concentrates on the road ahead of him as he speeds away, and Kelly looks back at the cars behind them. The cars race to a crowd-filled area around a huge fountain. DeVoe stops in front of the fountain and watches in his rearview mirror as the two cars approach the Mercedes from behind at high speed.
Come on. What's wrong with you? Come on, what's wrong with you?
Glaring into the mirror, DeVoe lowers his window and points his gun in the air.
What are you doing?
People scatter. DeVoe slams the Mercedes into reverse and drives between the two oncoming cars, clipping one and sending it into a spin as he passes. DeVoe slams on the brakes, puts the Mercedes in gear, speeds toward the spun-out car, and bounces off of it. Stops and watches solemnly as one of the cars comes directly at them, trying to hit DeVoe broadside. He drives forward at the last instant, and the car crashes into a store. Driving side by side with the last car, he stares at them as a man shoots from the passenger seat. The crashed car spins its wheels as the last car crashes into the Mercedes and spins to a stop. DeVos stops and looks back at the last car as the driver tries frantically to start it. Kelly braces herself as DeVos slams the car into reverse and races at the stalled car. He crashes into it, driving over the top and landing on the other side. A broken hydrant spews water into the air as he puts the Mercedes in the gear, drives his car into position, spinning the rubber off of his tires, and backs into the crashed car again. He immediately drives forward a few feet, and then crashes backwards into the car again. He floors the accelerator, spinning the shredded tires in reverse, and sparks fly from the rims against the concrete, igniting spilled gasoline on the street.
Come on.
The invoices.
DeVos gets out.
Come on.
The invoices.
Come on.
Go.
Go. Go. Go. Go. Go.
Holding his handgun, he pulls her from the car without the invoices, and they run. They dive forward onto the street as the cars explode. Wet and dirty, DeVos gets to his feet and strides toward the other car. As Kelly watches, he pulls his gun and without breaking stride, points it inside the crashed car. Turning immediately, he walks past Kelly without expression and leaves. Later in a hotel room, DeVos is sitting with his head in his hands and Kelly is slumped at a desk.
Dimitri has a daughter, Tasha. 16, she lives in Rybinsk. I remember when she was 3.
DeVos cups his hands behind his head, then reaches for the phone, but slams it back down.
Doesn't make sense, man. You don't kill a Dmitry Vertikov. There are certain rules. Killing him isn't useful.
Is it ever?
Sitting in front of her laptop, she stares at him, then looks away and stands. She moves to a window and looks out solemnly.
I never watched anybody die before.
He looks back toward her. She takes a deep breath, and they stare at each other for a long moment.
Welcome. Got mail.
Oh.
She steps to the laptop.
I emailed Schumacher's files to my AOL account before I logged off.
DeVos crosses the room.
Did it work?
Standing behind her, he looks over her shoulder.
Yeah. So we're looking for a vehicle hired in the Urals on about June 29th, right?
Okay, no, the truck's too small.
St. Petersburg, wrong direction. Point of origin, Chelyabinsk. Registration number 7056BM. Destination name, usually 44E.
Azerbaijan. It's just south of Russia.
He goes to a large map spread out on the bed.
It's 5 miles from Iran. Kodorov crosses that border and those nukes are gone.
What a payment number. Looks like a bank routing code.
DeVos picks up the phone and dials.
There's no names of any clients yet. 44E, does that mean anything to you?
What?
Schumacher put a private memo at the bottom of the invoice. It can't be copied and it wouldn't show up in any...
This is DeVos. We have a target vehicle. It's a cargo truck. Registration 7056 Bravo Mike. It's traveling south from Chelyabinsk to Imizli in Azerbaijan. Now, I am requesting a high priority tasker. Any birds,
any birds. Find this truck. We've got nukes heading for Iran.
Hell is 44E.
Trucks are stopped bumper to bumper along a narrow road. A long line of refugees is slowly walking in the opposite direction the trucks are headed. Meanwhile, a group of men are meeting in a large conference room. The screen reads, Serbian Parliament, Pale Bazin. A neatly dressed man enters and says, gentlemen, please. Zarko Preljevic has died. He never regained consciousness after being shot outside his church. His death is a tragic loss to his family, to his country, to our hopes for peace. He walks across the conference room. We know you've avoided politics, Dusan, but you are the alternate. Your people need you. Dusan looks back at Zarko's killer, who's sitting behind him. Later, the killer has a movie camera on a tripod and adjusts a TV. Dusan is sitting in an overstuffed chair in front of the camera. The killer steps behind the camera.
This is Bremen.
Yeah.
Dusan glances at some notes, then looks up.
I'm a Serb. I'm a Croat. I'm a Muslim. You will look at what I have done and say, of course. Why not? They are all animals. They have slaughtered each other for centuries. But the truth is, I am not a monster. I'm a human man. I'm just like you. Whether you like it or not.
Special Forces Command Center, Turkey.
Lieutenant Beach, you're running the operation from the ground, sir.
Gentlemen, tell me you found him.
Close, sir. Giving them an average speed of 65 clicks, if their destination initially is correct, and if they're taking a direct route. We've got them somewhere about here, in Dagestan, still in Russia, below Makhachkala, on the Caspian Sea. We've snuck a peek at everything within a 200-square-mile area. We haven't turned up your truck. We think they're probably stuck here in Kamu.
Beach points to a map.
There's a hell of a traffic jam down there, sir.
Trucks are too close together. We can't get an angle on the plates.
What's going on down there?
Renewed fighting between Armenia and Azerbaijan. Are clogged with refugees fleeing north.
Ken, give me a copy of Kodorov's intel phone records.
What are you thinking?
I need an outside line here. Somebody give me an outside line, please.
Ken, the young man with the glasses, steps to DeVoe as they look at a satellite image showing the line of trucks. On the road, refugees are still streaming past. In the Red Cross truck, General Kodorov is behind the wheel. Vlado is in the passenger seat, and a man with a mustache is dozing between them.
Refugees.
Azerbaijani, Georgian, Kazakhstani.
Don't curse them.
I don't care. I don't hate them for who they are. I hate them because they are poor. You want our speed?
The man with the mustache hands Kodorov a phone.
Hello.
Hey, Alec, how's the ride down there?
Look at this.
Doesn't traffic drive you nuts when you're in a hurry?
Tall. You're still trading stolen cars on the black market.
Remember all those television shots from the nose cone of the GBU missile slamming into those trucks?
Kodorov looks up at the sky.
Remember that picture? How it kept getting closer and bigger on the screen? You could just about see the faces of those drivers, and then... zap, the picture went dead. We didn't get to see what happened next. Well, guess what, Alec? You will.
He hangs up and turns the wheel. He drives forward out of the line of stopped trucks, and the satellite image captures the movement.
I guess that upset him.
Can you get an angle?
Wait a minute. He rear-ends some guy. That can't detonate that nuke, can it?
As long as no one opens the primary, they're absolutely safe.
Come on.
In the back of the truck, the balding man lifts a device from its casing. Beach and the others watch the satellite image.
Come on, sweetie. Come on. It's coming.
Beach enlarges the registration plate image on the front of the truck.
70, 56, Bravo Mike, that's it.
How long do we have him until the satellite passes out of range?
1 hour and 46 minutes.
Get in contact with Russian command, give them the exact location of the truck, Ken?
Boom.
DeVoe touches the image of the truck on the screen. In Sarajevo, Dusan is in his home, playing the piano. His hands glide smoothly over the black and white keys. and his face holds a pained expression. Meanwhile, DeVoe and Kelly are talking on telephones.
We have to go now.
We only have it under surveillance for another hour.
It doesn't matter what the State Department says, sir.
No, I understand, sir.
Fine. Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes, sir, will do.
They hang up.
Okay, go. Go.
No, no, you go.
Right, I was talking to the chairman of the Joint Chiefs. He says the State Department is dragging their feet.
I was just talking to the president. He says it's a Russian problem, they have to manage it.
No, we have the advantage now. We have to take the advantage
now. The Russians say they are handling this.
The Russians couldn't find snow in the middle of freezing winter. Look, it's this simple. When that satellite is out of range, those nukes are gone.
She stares at him solemnly.
No, it isn't.
It's only jet fuel.
Get up into NATO.
Good for you. Let's go, Rick.
Let's get
in.
Colonel, with Russia insisting you're handling this, you will not take action without authorization.
Now, what do you think I am, some gung-ho, stupid son of a bitch?
No, I don't think you're stupid. I think you're a talented soldier with sloppy impulse control, and I don't want you provoking an international incident because of a personal agenda.
My personal agenda is my business. You are not in Washington anymore. You are in the real world. In the real world, there are nuclear arms heading for Iran. So whether you agree with me or not,
DeVoe and other soldiers run to waiting helicopters, and the choppers lift off. In Sarajevo, Dusan is sitting in a cemetery in the rain. His right hand is cupped over a small lighted candle as he faces a white headstone. The killer is standing behind him under an umbrella. We must go, Dusan. Dusan looks back at the killer and places his right hand over a photograph of a woman and a little girl on the headstone. The candle flickers out. He kisses the photo, draws his coat around him, and leaves with the killer. Meanwhile, DeVoe is flying in a helicopter over a wooded area. Another chopper flanks his starboard side.
Cobra 3, this is Tango 6. What do we got?
Russian command has been notified of the target vehicle's location. Proceed to position and await further instructions.
Ken, does NRO have anything else up there for us yet?
They got us on standby.
All right, take this down. How much time are we looking at?
We can track them for another 45 minutes. Let's alert I-4 at the Basta checkpoint. They'll have to pass through there.
A dirt road winds through a small village with thatch-roofed huts. Haystacks dot the countryside. The Red Cross truck is stopped near a roadblock. And Vlado draws his gun.
Put that away.
Kodorov pushes it down, and the man with the mustache drives forward toward a few soldiers who are standing in the middle of the dirt road. One soldier lifts his hand, and the Red Cross truck stops. The soldier leans toward the driver's window. Step out of the truck, please. He steps around to the passenger's side and takes Kodorov's identification. I'm sorry, General. We've been ordered to check all vehicles, Kodorov replies. We're just carrying medical supplies. Let us through. I'm sorry, sir, but I have orders. Look at your codebook, Sergeant. The sergeant pulls a small book from his breast pocket. Kodorov says, today's authorization code is X16-7KTR8. The balding man is working in the back. The sergeant continues, yes, but I still have to search the truck. Kodorov demands, what is your name and unit? Name and unit, you hear me? A pickup stops behind the Red Cross truck. The sergeant glances back at it. I'm sorry, General. Go ahead, General. Thank you, Sergeant. The sergeant walks to the back of the truck. He stops. In the back, the men wait anxiously. The sergeant hits the side of the truck and yells, stop. I'm sorry, sir. You'll have to get out of the truck. Get out of the truck immediately. Kodorov replies, of course, and shoots the sergeant. The driver opens his door, leans out, and fires a grenade launcher at a jeep, exploding it and killing soldiers around it. Then he gets back in the truck and drives away. At the command center, Kelly watches television.
There's been a tragic setback in the ongoing effort to secure a lasting peace in the former Yugoslavia. So far, no one has taken responsibility for the killing of the Bosnian Serb finance minister, Zarko Preljevic, who was assassinated in a Sarajevo churchyard. Word of Preljevic's violent death has sent shockwaves through the international community. The well-liked moderate was considered a crucial player in the upcoming peace talks scheduled to begin this week in New York. Reporting live from Sarajevo, this is Jean Rogers.
Kelly moves quickly to a large map.
44E.
She pulls her finger along a horizontal line.
44th parallel runs through.
Where's that bank routing number? The one off the Kordek invoice.
Dr. Kelly, you better get over here.
I'm trying to check it against banks in and around Sarajevo.
Doctor?
What's going on?
A Russian roadblock. They're all dead, man.
Over three. They got them?
Kelly picks up a microphone.
Negative Tango 6. How much longer do we have them on satellite?
Less than 10 minutes.
Alert the Russians of the truck's current position. Tell them they have men down out there.
Wallace, stand by to track if they go to Bravo.
The Bose helicopter and two others hover over a field.
We've now reached the Federation airspace, Cobra 3. Running out of time, suggest we go.
Negative 6, do not proceed without authorization. Do the Russians have troops in the area?
Cobra 3, we're going to lose them on satellite. We have to go.
Get me a secure phone link to NMCC. Negative 6, do not proceed without authorization. You will not proceed.
Elsewhere, men are gathered in a meeting room.
When we lose the satellite, do we have other eyes? Garnet?
Sir, we have the target vehicle approaching the Iranian border. Requesting
permission to enter Russian Federation airspace and take it out.
Dr. Kelly, in your estimation, is this our only remaining course of action?
Based on available intel,
the Russians having no forces in place, our analysis of the satellite SIGIN and a number of...
I'm not asking for analysis, Dr. Kelly. I'm asking for a decision.
Must advise we go, sir.
Dr. Kelly, if there are nuclear weapons on that truck and the Russians can't interdict, are you willing to risk a war to stop it?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir, I am.
This is Cobra 3. We have a go. I repeat, we have a go.
Avoid foreign casualties, secure the target vehicle, detain anyone found inside.
Copy, Cobra. Six to task force. We're cleared as brief. Let's rock and roll.
Red Dog Pack to 3. Execute.
Sitting alone, Kelly listens to the transmission and lowers her head as the helicopters move out. The Red Cross truck is moving down a paved highway. Kutarov and the man with the mustache are in the cab.
Why are they being like that?
Kutarov looks into the back.
Slow down, Joe.
Vlado is watching the balding man as he continues working on a nuclear device. The helicopters race through the sky. In a radar station, Russian soldiers are sitting at their screens. A soldier turns toward a screen and puts on a headset. Unidentified aircraft, you have entered Russian Federation airspace. Identify yourself immediately. He glances back. Commander?
Russian control tower, this is Air Force 53762. A flight of three U.S. Air Force helicopters in pursuit of stolen nuclear weapons. Request a weapons hold status.
Three American Air Force helicopters, low altitude approximately 175 kilometers per hour, requesting weapons hold status. The commander says, intrusion, section 187, activate tracking and firing sequence, all batteries on my command.
You must return
to Turkish airspace, U.S. Air Force. Your intrusion is not authorized. You have crossed international line.
The screen locks onto the lead helicopter and the soldier says, battery one tracking.
They locked onto us.
Battery 2 tracking. The commander says, get Southern Command on the line. Tell them we have unauthorized entry by three U.S. attack helicopters.
Air Force 53762, we are in pursuit of stolen nuclear weapons on the way to Iran. Repeat, put Put your weapons on hold.
Battery tracking and ready to fire.
Reverse course immediately or we will begin to fire.
This is Red Dog 3. We're lit up like a Christmas tree.
This is Air Force 53762. Those weapons could be going to Cessna or Georgia. We repeat, put your weapons on hold.
They haven't answered yet, sir. The soldier says, we'll lose track in 8 seconds and prepares to flip a switch. Smoke drifts casually upward from a cigarette in the commander's steady hand as he stares at the screen showing the incoming helicopters. He says, take them out, and the soldier flips the switch.
Here they come!
The three helicopters veer off in different directions, and a missile explodes one chopper in the command center.
Number one is down. Cobra, we have a downed aircraft 2 miles east of checkpoint 4. Number three, acknowledge.
This is Red Dog 3. Do you see the aircraft? Do you see any survivors?
Negative. The whole force is up in flames. Number three, duck behind the hill. Behind the hill.
As the two remaining helicopters veer behind a hillside, Kelly and Ken are watching Beach at a computer.
How many men on that chopper?
9.
Kelly gasps and steps away unsteadily.
Number three, we're out of range. Target is 2 miles out.
As Kelly paces, the helicopters continue toward their target. In the back of the Red Cross truck, the balding man lifts a small unit from the core of the nuclear device.
Here it is.
Lotto takes it from him. With the truck speeding down the highway, Kotaroff opens the door and steps from the passenger seat. He grasps a corner of the truck bed and swings into the back of the truck with the other men.
What's he doing? Will it work? Can be activated by a single man. And will render a nuclear yield of 1 to 2 kilotons.
Why is he doing that now?
Because that was the deal. One warhead for us. Do it as you wish.
After I get my money.
Helicopters!
The two helicopters are close behind the Red Cross truck as it moves along the country roadside.
All right, gentlemen. Whatever you do, do not shoot any civilians. Do you understand?
Weapons at the ready. The men in the truck flip back the tarp. They begin firing. Wearing a backpack, Blotto steps to the far side of the truck and glances around as the helicopters return fire. The choppers fly forward, and the men in the truck follow their path with gunfire, shooting holes in the top of the tarp. Blotto slips under the tarp and hangs on the outside of the truck bed low to the ground.
Take out the road!
As one of the helicopters flies ahead of the truck, Blotto drops to the ground and rolls on the pavement. He stands with a backpack and looks toward the helicopter hovering over a bridge spanning a deep chasm. As the Red Cross truck approaches, the chopper fires 2 rockets in front of it, hitting the roadway. Lotto staggers backward as the roadway erupts in a ball of flame. The man with the mustache drives through the smoke and flames, dodging electrical poles that fall with a domino effect. The truck veers sideways, then stops with its cap dangling off the side over the deep chasm. A man falls out, and others are thrown against the sides. Choppers circle overhead, and DeVoe sees the front third of the truck hanging precariously over the edge of the bridge. In the helicopter,
bring me a heavy lift line!
2 men jump from the truck and roll under it. Kotaroff takes cover behind the metal containers in the truck as DeVoe slides down the line toward the tarp covering the truck bed. Crashing through the tarp, DeVoe gets his footing on the truck bed and pulls his handgun. As DeVoe turns to shoot out the back, Kotaroff grabs him from behind and pulls him inside. He knocks the gun from DeVoe's hand and it slides away. The truck teeters on the edge of the bridge, dragging highline wires and electrical poles behind it as the 2 men continue fighting. Highline wires tangled around the wheels strain to hold the truck back. The truck inches forward, dragging electrical poles and wires across the bridge behind it. Inside, Kotaroff wraps the heavy lift line around DeVoe's neck several times, then pulls on it. In the helicopter, a soldier has his hand on the line and feels the tug. DeVoe is yanked from the truck by the cord around his neck. Dangling at the end of the line beneath the helicopter, DeVoe reaches for a knife strapped to his legs and cuts the line. He falls back down onto the truck, and Kotaroff kicks him. He rolls across the bed and stabs Kotaroff in the foot. A soldier in the helicopter shoots Kotaroff, and he falls to his knees.
Where are they going, Alec?
He pushes Kotaroff away, then pulls back the tarp and looks up at the helicopter.
Get it down! Let's go, Lord! Heavy line! Let's go!
They drop another line with a heavy metal hook on the end.
Grab it! Get out! Drop a cable! Grab it! Bring it down! More! More!
DeVoe grabs the line, pulling it into the back of the truck toward the stack of metal containers.
Come on, get on! Fuck on!
He strains to pull the line to a strap around the devices, but is a few feet too short. The truck tips downward, and he climbs up the cable to look toward the chopper.
Lower it! We gotta lower it!
Highline wires snap from around the tires, and DeVoe pulls the hook within inches of the strap. In the cab, the man with the mustache loads a grenade launcher. He kicks open a door as DeVoe pulls the hook closer. The truck shifts. The gun goes off in the truck cab as DeVoe closes the hook around the strap. The truck falls, leaving DeVoe standing on top of the containers dangling from the helicopter wire. The men watch the truck explode in midair as it plummets downward. With Red Dog 3 circling around them, the other helicopter lowers DeVoe and the containers to the bridge. When the containers tilt, DeVoe falls and tumbles across the pavement. Pushing himself to his feet, he looks toward the containers resting on the bridge and watches a helicopter land beside them. American soldiers leap from the choppers and hurry toward DeVoe and the eight containers.
All right, sweep them! Open them up! Let's go! Let's go! You all right, sir?
Yeah! Open them up! Let's go! Open them up!
Let's go!
Give me a radio. Number three, are you there?
Six, what happened?
One assault aircraft is gone! Nine men are dead!
Diego!
Kotaroff is dead, and we have recovered eight nuclear warheads
in their containers.
That's not enough warheads.
What?
That's not enough warheads. That's not enough damn warheads.
Yeah, but once you can say something nice.
It was an SS-18, 10 warheads, one detonated, eight with you. That leaves one unaccounted for.
Colonel DeVoe! There's somebody alive down here!
Hold on a minute. Take this.
DeVoe hands a mic to a soldier and walks across the bridge.
You got a live one, Colonel.
He looks over a railing at the man dangling from a highline wire.
Do you speak English?
Yes, I went to Harvard. Cut me up, please.
Where's the other warhead?
Please bring me up.
Listen to me very carefully. You are going to die unless you tell me where the other warhead is.
I don't know. He took it. He's gone.
Who?
I don't know his name. He's with the ones who arranged this.
Kotaroff?
No, Kotaroff just handled the money. It was the other one. He made me dismantle the primary, make it mobile.
How?
It's in his backpack. Help me up, please.
DeVoe steps away and looks at the lush, tree-covered hills surrounding them. DeVoe strides across the bridge and motions for the mic.
Kelly, that guy got away with a bomb.
Copy, DeVoe. All right, come on back.
At the command center, Ken takes a printout to Kelly.
We got it. The bank account on the Kornik invoice, registered to an address in Grbavica, Serbian suburb of Sarajevo.
Good. Good. Get this information to I-4. Tell them to proceed with caution.
He walks away. Kelly turns toward a table map and leans over with both hands resting against it. She clasps her hands, then drums her fingers against it nervously.
Where are you going?
Meanwhile, Vlado climbs a rocky hillside, the backpack strapped securely against his shoulders. Ahead of him, a small airplane is sitting in a flat valley. Two men move toward him, and he walks down the hill to meet them. In Grbavica, Bosnia, two I-4 Jeeps speed down a crowded city street. soldiers get out and storm up a stairway toward the entrance of a building. At the airplane, the killer follows Dusan as he stumbles toward Vlado and hugs him. Dusan says, "You made it."
Alex.
"I told you I would." Dusan glances at the backpack and asks, "Is it heavy?" The killer says, "We must go." Dusan presses his hand gently against Vlado's cheek and smiles. At the building, the armed I-4 troops burst into an apartment. Shining flashlights and pointing their guns, they quickly make their way from room to room. They stop when one soldier finds a videotape with a handwritten label that reads, I-4. At Special Forces Command Center, Kelly is standing at the hangar as the two helicopters return. Covered with dust and grime, DeVoe climbs out of the chopper and strides toward her.
Dr. Amir Taraki, Pakistani, PhD in astrophysics, educated at Harvard.
That's right. We educated half the world's terrorists.
You need to tell me exactly what he said.
All right,
you
removed the primary from the warhead and you put it in a backpack.
The primary is packed with plutonium. Detonated, it could still take out 10 city blocks.
I-4 takers
transmitting
right now, this monitor.
Kill maybe 100,000 people in a densely populated area like Sarajevo or Tuzla.
You will look at what I have done and say, "Of course, why not?"
They watch Dusan's tape.
"They are all animals. They have slaughtered each other for centuries. But the truth is, I'm not the monster. I'm a human man. I'm just like you, whether you like it or not. For years, we have tried to live together until a war was waged on us, on all of us. A war by our own leaders. And who supplied the Serb cluster bombs, the Croatian tanks, the Muslim artillery shells that killed our sons and daughters? It was the governments of the West who drew the boundaries of our country.
Sometimes in ink, sometimes in blood, the blood of our people.
And now you dispatch your peacekeepers to write our destiny again. We can never accept this peace that leaves us with nothing but pain.
Pain the peacemakers must be made to feel. Their wives, their children, their houses and churches. So now you know.
Now you must understand. Leave us to find our own destiny. May God have mercy on us all."
I-4 can shut down Bosnia. He's never going to get into Sarajevo.
Wait. He's not going there. We weren't meant to find this until after he had detonated the bomb. Now, pain peacemakers must be made to feel. The peacemakers aren't in Bosnia. They're in Europe and the U.S. Now, they're signing a new treaty this week, right?
Tomorrow at the U.N.
What is the address of the U.N.?
Over by the river. East side.
44th Street. 44E. He's going to New York.
Meanwhile, Dusan is boarding an airplane. He stops on the stairs and watches a black trunk rolling onto the plane. The top is stamped, "Diplomatic Papers Confidential." He crosses himself and continues onto the plane. In a private jet, Ken takes a fax to DeVoe.
"Yeah, Ken. The only way that we can close down the airport is with the Federal Nuclear Emergency Response Plan. It has to come from her."
"I'll give it to her."
Ken walks away. DeVoe stands with the facts and walks to Kelly, who is looking at information sheets on military personnel. She runs her thumb gently across a photo. He sits beside her and lowers his head wearily.
"I wanted to know who they were.
She looks over at him. And he turns to look directly at her. Turning away, she covers her face with her hands. He looks down somberly as she starts to cry. He places the paper in front of her, squeezes her shoulder, and walks away. Wiping tears from her face, she takes the paper and follows him down a corridor.
Secure line to NMCC.
She takes a phone from Ken.
This is Dr. Julia Kelly. I am issuing a presidential directive for a federal nuclear emergency plan. We have a possible weapon of mass destruction coming into the United States by unknown terrorist or terrorists.
Meanwhile, Dasan looks out his airplane window at the Manhattan skyline below. Later, cars marked NYPD police pull up the plane on the runway and stop. The screen reads, LaGuardia Airport, New York. Plainclothesmen and uniformed police officers get out and run to the plane.
Taking the rear.
Yes, sir.
Dusan watches from his window as they board the plane.
See diplomatic evacuation perimeter.
Ladies and gentlemen, have your attention up here, please. I'm with the UN. We've been informed of a serious threat to the treaty signing. So we have to get you off this plane to ensure your safety. Now, if you would all please stand up now. Everyone, please stand up. Thank you. We're going to have you move to the exits at the rear in front of the aircraft in orderly fashion.
Dusan stands with the crowd and slowly makes his way through the airplane and out the door. He nods at a police officer and goes down the stairway. An NYPD helicopter takes Kelly and DeVoe to a New York command center where they follow a military officer through a busy situation room.
Glad you could make it. Coffee?
No, thank you, sir. I popped a couple of stay wakes on the plane.
Dr. Kelly?
I'm fine.
How many stay wakes did she take? This is Mark Carey, Energy. Over here, Special Agent in Charge, David Brannigan, FBI.
Welcome to New York. We're running NYPD and agency response out of here in coordination with DOE.
Evacuation plans?
FEMA National Guard are on alert.
What about Ness?
Energy has containment teams on alert in Battery Park, awaiting instructions.
We're running casualty scenario. Initial blast would throw 60 rads of prompt radiation out to 3 miles. That's most of lower Manhattan and Queens, 2.5 to 3 million people, 50% survival rate.
We're going to need to monitor and localize wind patterns, and we're going to need radiation detectors on the ground and in the air.
Intel report from I-4.
Let me see that. DeVoe studies a sheet of paper.
All right, Vlado Murek, Bosnian Serb, radical, been missing for about a week. Father fought with Tito, no wife or children.
Has a half-brother who was a classical pianist in Sarajevo, served as a cultural
liaison.
Listen to
this. Murek's been arrested 3 times in the last year for smuggling and black marketeering.
It's got to be him.
No, something doesn't what? Fit. The man in the tape, he's no black marketeer, and he's not a nationalist. Do you remember what he said? He said, I am a Serb, a Croat, and a Muslim. He is holding everybody responsible.
Sir, I'm jumping off. Can you pass the manifest? Because I've got a V. Murek on flight 1204 from Zurich to Kennedy.
Arriving when?
Touchdown 7 minutes ago.
Call JFK, get the security, send him a picture.
We've got to Kennedy Airport next.
Later.
Excuse me.
At the airport, Kelly and DeVoe run up an escalator.
All right, cover all the exits. Nobody gets out of here. You understand me? Nobody gets out.
DeVoe, who's DeVoe?
Swiss Air Flight 1204, non-resident.
20, station 20, this way.
Along with security, they move through the terminal, searching faces of the people in the crowd.
He's not here. He's not here.
We got a possible identification at desk 7, far corner.
The security guard points and they hurry away.
Excuse me?
Cautiously approaching a man with his back to them, they draw their guns and inch toward him.
Lava Merrick?
The killer turns toward them and Kelly stares at him.
Yes.
DeVoe lowers his gun.
Who the hell is this?
Meanwhile, Vlado leaves the airport and walks to a taxi. He glances around, then gets in. The taxi drives away. Inside the terminal, the killer is handcuffed and Kelly is talking on a phone.
All right. Passport's fake, claims a boat on the street in Sarajevo.
We've been able to detain 8 men so far, tried to enter today using passports issued by countries of the former Yugoslavia. None matches your description.
8? That's it?
Where the hell
even
is he?
With the treaty signing?
Well, that doesn't include the delegations.
What?
Well, they don't go through customs. Together, must have been a couple hundred.
Kelly and DeVoe run. In a New York City hotel room.
Gordon's Brutus.
Right.
Half-brother's 800.
And sir.
The black trunk is sitting on the floor. The scene moves through the room toward the bathroom where Dusan is in the shower. His hands are resting against the wall and his head is bent forward under the shower spray. He looks up, letting the water hit directly onto his face. In the hotel lobby, Kelly, DeVoe, and the FBI are hurrying up a stairway with a woman.
No, ma'am, let me explain. We are talking about a possible terrorist situation. We need to detain the entire delegation.
These are diplomats. Yeah. Here is guests of the U.S. State Department.
All right.
I can't order them.
Okay, well, then I need their names and their room numbers.
We're looking for a delegate, and his name is Vladomir.
Maybe what floor they're on, too.
This man isn't named Vladomir. This is Dusan Gavrik. He's an alternate with the Bosnian Serb delegation. Their minister was assassinated last week. Mr. Gavrik is attending in his place. Brother.
In his room, Dusan opens the trunk and unzips the backpack inside. He looks down at the nuclear device. Elsewhere, an elderly man carrying a white poodle tries to leave an elevator. DeVoe, Kelly, and the FBI rush in, blocking his exit. Dusan sets a timer on the device and a readout starts counting backward from 40. In the elevator, the man covers the poodle's face with his hat. Dusan moves down a hallway, adjusting the weight of the backpack on his shoulders as DeVoe's elevator climbs past the 12th floor. Dusan pushes the down button. The elevator opens and Dusan gets in just as the elevator beside it opens and DeVoe and the others get out. As they hurry down the hall, the man with the dog steps forward timidly. DeVoe and an FBI agent move toward a hotel room door with their guns drawn and the others follow closely behind. DeVoe raises his fist and they stop.
Go, go!
They rush into the room as Dusan steps from a revolving door onto the street. In the room, DeVoe moves toward an open window and looks out. Kelly hurries to the empty trunk, lying open on a chair.
Diplomatic papers. They never even searched it.
DeVoe touches some food.
Still warm.
They run out. Holding the straps of the backpack, Dusan moves through the crowded New York City street.
Move.
DeVoe, Kelly, and the FBI hurry from the building and run down the sidewalk. They stop in a crowd of people and look around. Dusan continues walking and passes a man playing the violin on the sidewalk. He walks on and sees men with their families and girls walking happily together. A man nuzzles his face against a woman's cheek with his arm around a young girl. Dusan stops for a moment and turns to look at them, and scenes of another city street flash into his mind. Sandbags are piled against the buildings, and Dusan is reading the newspaper as he walks through a crowd. Men begin shooting into the crowd from upstairs windows and the balconies of nearby buildings. People scatter in the street as Dusan searches the crowd and yells. He sees crumpled bodies littering the sidewalk ahead of him, and he runs to a woman and a little girl lying in a pool of blood. Leaning over them, he shakes the woman, then pulls the little girl to him and picks her up. He stands, carrying the child's limp body in his arms. The scene returns to the present, and Dusan is hurrying down the New York City street, his arms outstretched as if still carrying the child. He stops and opens his clenched fist, then looks at his empty hands and hurries on. He runs across the street at an intersection and hails a cab.
East 44th Street.
Kelly is on the phone looking at a map stretched over the hood of a car.
DOE, you have anything yet?
Choppers are up. A couple of plus two spikes reported, but nothing approaching target levels.
All right. Backpack's going to be leaking radiation, so they should be able to locate him within a 3 to 4 block area.
Yeah, right, set up the roadblocks here. We're going to close off 2nd Avenue, funneling down 43rd to the UN. We deploy snipers between 1st and 2nd and take him out.
General,
we have to close down the east side of 2nd Avenue from 55th to 42nd and the north side of 42nd from 6th to the river.
Brannigan and the general turn to a map.
All right, we're going to be positioned at the UN. Instruct all field agents, all snipers. Subject cannot be aware of the hunt.
On the street, police carry sawhorses that read police line, do not cross, police department, and block streets throughout the area. Traffic becomes congested as cars slow down. In the taxi, the driver shakes his head.
Traffic bad all morning.
He looks back at Hassan. In the air, a helicopter has a small device attached to its underbelly.
Chopper, Hunter 1, anything?
That's a negative.
HQ, Kelly, we're going to work our way south down into the funnel. Just stop at anyone with a backpack north of 55th.
Roger. How soon do we get to the UN?
It's a state issue. This is a national emergency.
On the streets, young men and women are stopped by the police and their backpacks are searched.
Get over here! Get over here! Get over here! What the fuck is this smell?
In a traffic jam. Emergency vehicles make their way through the tangled mass of cars, and military Humvees hurry through the streets. Troops are being transported in the back of open trucks, and armed men leap from city vehicles.
Okay, guys, let's move out!
Elsewhere, traffic is lined up for blocks, and people are standing in the streets and leaning out their car windows. Dusan pays his driver and gets out of the taxi. He checks his watch, adjusts the weight on his back, and starts walking. On another street, Kelly and DeVoe get out of a car and run to a man in a military uniform.
Looks like Desert friggin' Storm out there! You get these men out of here now! Get them out!
Where's the containment trucks?
It's gridlocked out there!
Where are they?
We picked up a diffuse radiation source somewhere between 3rd and 2nd, 54th and 46th.
Can you be more precise, DOE?
Not at this altitude.
All right, I'm on my way. Listen, you keep an open channel. When we locate him, you'll move out of the nesting.
DeVoe gets back in the car. Dusan is making his way down a sidewalk and passes a street sign for 52nd and 3rd. He crosses the street. FBI snipers hurry across a rooftop and take up positions near the edge. A sniper puts a picture of Dusan on the roof and weights it down with a small rock. He aims his rifle toward the street and peers through the telescopic sight.
HRT, command, put me direct with your closest shooter.
Hunter 1, copy.
Leader, this is 1.
Expect he's coming your way, 1.
Roger that. Do we have a green light?
Affirmative.
Shown from the gun barrel, Shooter 1 peers through the sight and his eye is magnified as he gets people in the crosshairs of his high-powered rifle. Blending in with a huge crowd of pedestrians, Dusan walks to the corner of East 44th Street.
Good, that's good.
He sees policemen and continues walking.
Keep moving, thank you.
To the left, please.
Round the barrier.
I think he's somewhere between 1st and 2nd, probably below 46th.
All positions, do you see target?
No, sir. Not me.
Come on. Come to come.
A man is walking with a little girl on his shoulders, and a woman with him is carrying a baby. Dusan is walking behind him. A shooter gets Dusan in his sights.
This is 4. Target acquired 300 meters. Not clean. Too many friendlies.
Who would this leader take a shot?
It's a child, a family.
Acknowledge. Take the shot.
Dusan is behind the little girl.
4, this is leader, I repeat, take the shot. Take the shot!
He starts to squeeze the trigger.
Shoot him, take the shot!
The child leans forward, then straightens.
Oh, God.
Somebody shoot him!
Dusan walks out of sight under a tree.
This is 1. I have target acquired. 400 yards inbound. No shot. Should open at 43rd.
DeVoe rounds a corner into heavy traffic and gets out of the car. Dusan reaches the corner of East 43rd Street.
FBI!
I need to get through here.
Yeah, you and the rest of New York. I'll just take it easy, all right? Let's get out of here.
A policeman looks up.
Dispatch, this is 1501. I need backup on 43rd Street as soon as you can get it.
He steps behind Dusan.
Here, this is Hunter 1, waiting for target to clear.
The policeman draws his gun.
You with the backpack. Get your hands up. Get out of the way. Get your hands up.
The crowd clears.
I'm a diplomat with the United Nations.
Dusan turns with his hands raised.
I must be allowed to pass.
He's hidden from the shooter's view by a tree.
Leader, I may have lost him. He stopped.
What?
He may have stopped. I'm not sure. He went behind some trees.
He's got to be there.
What do you got in the backpack, buddy?
Cuffs.
Dusan is on his knees as Vlado walks up and shoots the policeman.
Negative, sir. Somebody's shooting. Corner of 43rd and 7th.
Dusan and Vlado run.
Is he down?
The shooter aims. A woman falls.
Toward
42nd. Stay in contact with the containment trucks and have them ready to move on my command.
Nick, come in.
Where are you from?
Okay, I got another squad.
Philadelphia.
Give me the keys.
She gets behind the wheel and drives away. Lotto and Dusan run down the street. DeVoe is behind him with his handgun drawn.
DOE, you have him?
The helicopter has a grid map of the city. Dusan follows Blotto along the street and Kelly drives closer. DeVoe and FBI agents run into the street and DeVoe leaps onto the hood of a car in a traffic jam. The agents follow him, leaping from the top of one car to the next. They move down the long stretch of cars, bounding from hood to trunk as they race toward Blotto and Dusan on the adjoining sidewalk. The helicopter follows their path overhead. DeVoe slides across the hood of a taxi and lands on the sidewalk as Vlado and Dusan go up a stairway on a dead run. Little girls in school uniforms scatter as they pass. The two men shove people out of the way as they race down the streets with their guns drawn. DeVoe is close behind them. Kelly screeches to a stop as Dusan runs in front of her car and bumps into it. He stares directly into her face, then hurries away. She gets out as he runs off. Opening a metal gate, he runs into an alley, and Kelly runs up to DeVoe.
He's the second officer first! Give me back up
there! He's there! He went down there! No!
Stay behind me!
Rounding a brick building, Dusan hurries down another dark alley and races up a flight of metal stairs. A gate is closed at the top.
Drop your weapon and show me your friggin' hand.
We got him, alley 41st.
As Dusan lowers his gun, Vlado approaches, but DeVoe hears him, spins, and shoots Vlado. Dusan comes down the stairs, shooting wildly. DeVoe returns fire, then he and Kelly scramble for cover as Dusan goes to his brother.
You all right?
They take off after the terrorists. Dusan is helping his wounded brother down the sidewalk, and people scatter as he's still holding a gun in his hand. They climb a stairway into a building. Dusan half carries and half drags Blotto along a corridor lined with school lockers.
Signal just yet. You're right there. He's got to be indoors.
Blotto falls. Dusan is leaning over his brother. Outside, DeVoe and Kelly are running hard along the sidewalk. Lotto's body goes limp, and Dusan kisses his cheek. Kelly and DeVoe race into the corridor. DeVoe shoots Dusan. Kelly and DeVoe chase Dusan through the school corridor and outside.
South end, same to the north.
DOE, what do you got?
Still picking up a diffuse energy. We're somewhere in the area. We're circling back now.
DeVoe and Kelly look up and down a street.
He knows he'll never make it to the UN.
He doesn't have to. He's got a nuclear weapon. All he has to do is sit down behind a dumpster and take out half of Midtown Manhattan, including the UN.
Behind a dumpster. He wants his death to mean something.
Keep circling. Wait, guys, all right, fan out. We're establishing new perimeter. It's got to be within 200 yards. I shot him. Look for blood. Okay. Door to door.
There's no sign, Colonel. He probably ducked into a building.
Keep looking.
We'll continue circling a 6-block area.
Standing alone in the street, Kelly turns her ear to listen.
DeVoe!
He looks up. They start running. In a church, Dusan is walking wearily down a red carpet into the sanctuary, his gun hanging from his right hand. Staring at the front of the church, he falls and drops to his knees. Kelly and DeVoe cross the street toward the entrance. The choir director turns.
Hit it there.
He waves them away with a handgun, and the children run from the sanctuary. He stands and staggers forward as DeVoe works his way through the children into the church. Kelly enters, walking slowly and looking around the room. DeVoe moves forward, wide-eyed, holding the gun firmly at arm's length. He sees a child under a pew.
Go.
She runs out, and he continues down the aisle, looking anxiously between the pews. Kelly moves forward. She stops. Dusan is sprawled across the floor with a backpack and gun.
You cannot stop this. Never.
Okay, just stay still. Stay there.
She inches forward.
Stay still. It's okay.
She kneels down as DeVoe runs up with his gun aimed at Dusan.
You don't want to die like this. Tell me about the bomb. Is it on the trigger? Is it on a timer? Is it activated? Come on, talk to me. We can decide on a way out of this.
Dusan moves and DeVoe cocks his gun. Dusan stares at her.
Who decided for my wife? My child murdered. Huh? For what? For what? For breathing. For smiling. And now I'm left.
What is it you want?
Irzelim da bude kao pre. I want it to be like it was.
Sir, it's not our war.
It is now.
He shoots himself.
No!
They run to him and roll him over to get to the backpack.
It's on a timer.
Hey, Lieutenant, the bomb's on a timer, all right?
Ken, where the hell are they?
I don't know, honey.
Ken, tell me this is here.
Affirmative, we've cleared 43rd. They'll be there in 4 minutes.
The timer on the bomb reads 2 minutes, 47 seconds.
They're not going to make it. They're not going to make it.
Okay. You're going to have to do this.
Do you understand? Now, take a look at this and tell me what you see. Take a look at this and tell me what you see.
An SSA team primary with a plutonium core. Bomb inside a bomb. It has a capacitor relay detonator, double pull, double throw. The only way of knowing is to open it up.
Leaning over the bomb, she looks up at him.
What?
All right, let's move it into this tower. Get it off him. Get it off him.
Hang on.
What?
We got a tripwire right here. Okay, we're going to move the man with the bomb all at once. Ready, go!
Let's go! Let's go,
Pepple! DeVoe and two FBI agents move Dusan.
Why in here?
It'll help contain the radiation. All right, you need to get out of the church. Now, please, try to evacuate as many people from this area as you can.
The agents leave.
I need something for the screws. Anything. Quick!
Go!
She works intently over the bomb with DeVoe's pocket knife. The knife slips, and she turns a screw with her fingers. She looks up at the bow.
DeVoe, get out of here.
Okay. I'll be in the truck.
She fumbles at removing another screw. The timer reads 1 minute 30 seconds. A screw comes out, and she lifts off a small metal plate. Inside is a metal piece surrounded by copper wiring.
The plutonium core is surrounded by explosive panels. Give me the knife. I need the knife back. We can separate one of the panels. We may be able to blow up the outer bomb without the core going to nuclear yield.
Hey, you'll blow this up. You'll blow up the bomb? And you know what you're doing, right? You've done something like this before.
If you stolen nuclear primaries, Jerry would buy Pakistanis? No.
He nods nervously as she flies at the edge of the core with a knife. The timer reads 37 seconds. She flies hard. And the blade breaks at 29 seconds.
I need your gun. Give me the gun. I need the gun.
Go. Easy.
All right.
14, 13, 12, 11, let's go. 10, 9,
go.
8, come on.
The edge pops open.
Go.
They run as the timer continues counting down. They leap through a stained glass window and are blown into the street. Smoke and debris settle around them as DeVoe crawls to Kelly.
Come here. Are you okay? Hey, are you okay? Hey. Come here.
He helps her sit up. Bleeding and dirty, she smiles at him weakly.
You okay?
She puts her arms around him and starts to cry.
All right.
Kneeling beside her, he cradles her head in his hand and holds her tightly.
Yeah. Hey, listen. You're okay, all right? You're okay. Yeah.
You have to get yourself
ready. Go. Come around. Julia! We have your back. Hey, Julia!
Men in protective suits and gas masks take them to separate hazmat vehicles. Wrapped in yellow blankets, they stare at each other as they are led into the trucks and driven away. Later, Kelly is swimming laps in the pool. Reaching the far end, she looks over the edge and sees a man's black shoe. She looks up to see DeVoe in uniform smiling down at her. She pushes off and floats backwards for a moment.
So, they give you any new medals?
Yes, they did.
Well, you worked very hard for them.
Thank you.
They smile at each other.
So we've got kind of a tradition over military ops whenever combatants come back from the field in one piece. We buy each other a beer.
You made that up.
Yes, I did.
He chuckles.
Well, I got 10 more to go.
He glances down with a smile.
I'll wait.
He takes a step back and she swims away, glancing at him over her shoulder as she moves smoothly through the water. And he smiles.